It's clearly a debate because there's no direct data, so we're discussing your indirect comparisons, and I think it's important to make that statement up front so that we're clear that this is about interpretation of data. But I think that the issues really arise around where did we start, and you know, what has been proposed, and can we see a logical sequence from that? And we've always up to now taken tamoxifen as 5 years as the gold standard. And I think that one important issue to make is that we have got data about 5 years of an AI versus tamoxifen. We've now got two studies of that, which shows that in terms of efficacy, it's clearly more effective overall as a group. There's different side effect profiles. We've got no data on sequencing, by which I mean starting tamoxifen now and changing it 2 to 3 years. And that's different from the switch data. This is about seeing a woman today and saying, I am going to start you off, all my patients, off on tamoxifen and switch them over at 2 to 3 years. The switch data was taking a group of people who'd got to 2 years and for whom there'd been a number of recurrences in that initial population, and the people who were still disease-free 2 to 3 years, switching those over. And so the sequence and the switch are different things.
And, you know, it kind of sounds like splitting fine hairs that really don't mean anything, but I think maybe it does.
Well, I think it does, Neil, in the sense that we all know that in ER-positive disease, 40% of people are hormone unresponsive. And we know, too, that in the adjuvant setting, that there are peaks of recurrences around 2 years. And we know that occurs in both ER-positive and ER-negative. And so it's highly likely, this is my own view on this, it's highly likely that you are seeing a disproportionate number of these ER-positive, hormone-resistant patients recurring in the first 2 years. Therefore, by the time you get to 2 to 3 years, you're left with a more hormone-sensitive group. Therefore, if you've got a new drug which is more efficacious, you will see a bigger hazard ratio or risk reduction in that population than you would in the initial population up front.
When you say hormone resistant, there's also a question of tamoxifen resistant.
I'm using the same hormone in both situations here, so we'll come back to the difference between... What I'm saying is if you look at tamoxifen-treated patients, as I say, there's 40% of people who don't respond. And in the adjuvant setting, I suspect that there'd be a disproportionate number of those patients who recur earlier, right? In fact, we did a very interesting study, which we published in Breast Cancer Research and Treatment, which is why I say this. And it's quite complex, so let's just take it through. We took... It was about 1,000 patients in an original series who'd never had adjuvant therapy. So they'd had surgery, radiotherapy, this is the 1970s, early 80s, surgery and radiotherapy, no systemic therapy, and then some of them got recurrence. And there's about 400 of those people. Now, if you plotted the disease-free survival of the patients, all the population, there's no difference in ER-positive and ER-negative patients, right? There's a slight separation of the curve, about 5 years, but it comes back together again in the long term. If you look at overall survival, that is significantly different. And it's different because after they got the recurrence, they were given hormone therapies. So if you take the 400 people now, the subpopulation who got the recurrence, by knowing what happened in metastatic disease, you know whether they were hormone sensitive or not. So you now have two populations of ER-positives and two populations of ER-negatives. You have ER-positive, hormone-sensitive, if you are positive, hormone insensitive, and ER negative, hormone sensitive, obviously a small population, but we know 10% respond, and the big population of ER negative, hormone insensitive patients. Those are the four groups. If you take now those 400 patients on whom you have got hormone sensitive data, and you replot the disease-free survival curve, so they're never having hormones in the disease-free survival, but you know from the future what the hormone sensitivity is, actually, rather than two curves that overlap each other, ER-positive and ER-negatives, those curves separate out. And the ER-positive, hormone-insensitive group recur earlier than the ER-positive, hormone-responsive group, even though they've not had any hormones. And so it's telling you that those populations, although we call them ER-positive, there's something else about those cancers that make them recur quicker. And that's maybe not surprising why they don't respond to hormone therapy so well.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And so that's the point I'm making about the difference between giving a group of people tamoxifen up front, a switch policy up front, and giving them a switch policy at 2 to 3 years. You've taken out a population, a greater population of the ER-positive hormone-insensitive patients. And that's why I think in the data on the switch studies, you see a higher hazard ratio difference, because the AIs are more effective drugs, but they're being given to a group of people who are hormone sensitive. Therefore, you get a chance of making a bigger effect.
And so I guess the question is, what's the effect of aromatase inhibitors in those people who recur in the first couple of years? And I guess the answer is it decreases it substantially.
It decreases it substantially too. It probably does have an effect on the HER2 positive type of person. The other thing to say is, and this is why I think we're talking different types of breast cancer, different subpopulations. I mean, initially when the data came out, you remember you had the ATAC data, which was an AstraZeneca up front. You had the exemestane data for the switch policy and the letrozole policy for the extended 5 years. And with the upfront, it was a 20% hazard reduction. With the switch, it was 40%. And with the extended, it was 40%. And so people get into this whole question of, was one thing better than the other? The first thing to say is that these drugs, as far as I can see in terms of efficacy, don't really show, at this point in time, huge significant differences. Now, when we get more data, ATAC and BIG 198, letrozole and anastrozole have very similar hazard ratios. When you look at the switch data, and look at the exemestane study, and look at the anastrozole German-Austrian study and the Italian study, the hazard ratio is very similar, it's about 0.6. And now when you look at the MA17 and the ABCSG6A study, the Austrian study of anastrozole, again the hazard ratio is very similar. So used in the same situations, these drugs give similar hazard ratios. Used in different situations, they give different hazard ratios. And so the implication must be that you're treating different populations of breast cancer.